ཨ་གི་ཤེས་ཤེས་ཡི་བོ་དོན་ནམ་གི་ཁོ་ལ་བེན་ཅེས་སང་ཡེ་དྲུ་བ་ཞོ་སང་ཡེ་ཅེས་དོན་ཕོ་ཡུ་ཅན་ནམ་ལ་ཅན་ཅོ་བ་དོ་དན་ནེ་ཨ་གི་ཤེས་ཤེས་ཡི་བོ་དོན་ནམ་གི་ཁོ་ལ་བེན་ཅེས་སང་ཡེ་དྲུ་བ་ཞོ་ནེ་དོ་ཅན་ཡེ་སོ་ནེ་དོ་བ་དམ་ཅེས་གང་བེ་ཅེས་དེན་བེ་ཅེས་ནེ་དེན་དོ་བ་གོ་དན་དེ་ལ་ཅ་ཟན་ཏོ་ཡེ་ཡི་ཅེས་ 那以前军长干嘛去了？面具谢谢，谢谢马大姐。这个，这个，感谢他们，我大姐呢，现在这个要过来是。
Good evening. Last week I had a small operation. So for those of you who came and there was no class, I apologize about that.
那可是你妈，我说，搞了修复来了呢。
Last time we spoke, for a while now we've been looking at the presentation on causality, on karma. So last time we spoke about how the karma that we have previously accumulated, that this always follows us, that it always accompanies us like a shadow. And even if we are not aware of the karma that is accompanying us, it is still there. And whatever experience we have, whether it's a happy experience or a suffering experience, this comes from karma that we have accumulated. So for example, if we're experiencing an illness or a physical difficulty, this comes from previously accumulated negative karma. And whatever karmic imprints we have accumulated, whatever actions we did in the past that led to the accumulation of karmic imprints, these will eventually ripen. And then similarly, of course, whatever virtuous actions we have engaged in, whether small or great, they have led to the accumulation of karmic seeds, and these karmic seeds are stored on our continuum, and they too will ripen in the future as a happy or pleasurable experience. So therefore, the summary of what we looked at last time was that we need to abandon engaging in any type of non-virtuous action, including small actions, and not think that they're too small to matter, but we need to turn away from small non-virtues as well as the greater non-virtues. And similarly, of course, we need to engage in powerful virtuous deeds, but when we have the opportunity to engage in a small virtuous deed, we should take that opportunity and not have the attitude of, oh, only some small benefit will come from this, it's not really worth my while. Rather, we should engage in small virtuous activities as well.
Ah,
Today we're continuing with the presentation, so we're in the middle of page 120. And so the presentation continues in that whatever we have accumulated in the past will eventually ripen, and unless, and if it's a non-virtuous karmic imprint, unless we have confessed and purified it, it will definitely ripen. So just above the middle of page 120, there's a short story about Buddha Shakyamuni, who was pierced, his leg was pierced by a splinter. So someone said, asked him, how is this possible? You're a Buddha, and yet your leg has been pierced by a splinter. What is the cause of this to happen? So the Buddha recounted that in a distant previous lifetime, before he had attained enlightenment, when he was a bodhisattva, he killed a sailor by the name of Black Spearman. And then the karmic ripening result of that is that now that he is a Buddha, this the karmic ripening result that would have been very powerful has now still ripened, but ripened as in the form of his leg being splintered, his leg being pierced by a splinter of wood.
And then there's another
story that's similar to this, which is Shakyamuni Buddha, amongst his many disciples, there were two that were foremost. So the one that was seen as the one of sharpest intelligence, the one of most outstanding intelligence, was Shariputra. And the other with the most developed miraculous powers was Moggallana. So these were his two supreme students. And with the miraculous powers that they had, they used to often travel to the lower realms, the realms of the pretas and the hell realms, so as to work for the welfare of those sentient beings.
That 他尿啊，进来，可能给那尿嘛，有可能我缺几个的，感觉变得毛缺，当天那个结结巴子缺的落吧，尿出来的，你在地王给尿啊结巴了，实际上，现在我们那钱吧，可能钱是大米缺钱的，尿出来些，但是你尿出来些些尿啊结些，实际上，当俺的尿啊结完子，但提米是水，但你落嘛的给你结束当然，但缺些，忙活就吃到尿出来尿啊结，人家有几个，实际上。 写的不但毛毛不腻嘞，把脸过来是，那个脸搁这过来是呢。哦，当你缺钱的，拿出来想你缺的，大把人民币，实际上你缺钱呢，我就刚刚用不多。实际上，像那东西缺的蛮结实，这个民币是。那呢，那毛毛的，三月九日那个缺的太小，实际上，快缺的毛毛的些，实际上，当你像那东西，三月九日那个。
Amongst, so on one of the many trips down to the hell realm, they came across a former Tritika teacher, so a teacher of a different philosophy, a philosophy other than Buddhism. So they came across a Tritika teacher who had been reborn in hell. And so he had recently died and immediately had been reborn in hell. And he made a request to Shariputra and Moggallana that please, when you return to the human realm, please give a message to my many students and tell them that where I have been reborn and the reason that I've been reborn here is because I have been engaging in our mistaken practices of the Tritikas, for example, making animal sacrifices and the like. So please tell my students that I have been reborn here, that this path that we follow, these practices that we follow, that this is mistaken and that they must stop practicing in this way and rather they should take up the practices of the Buddha Shakyamuni because that he presents an unmistaken path. So his request to Shariputra and Moggallana was that they take this message back to his former students.
그런
And furthermore, when he died out of faith, his students built a stupa for him and put the bones of his body inside the stupa. And now, whenever they make offerings to that stupa, he suffers in the hell realm. And the greater the offerings they make, the more and the stronger the ripening result of suffering is that he experiences in the hell realm. So again, he requests that please, they really need to stop doing this.
其实呢，那点那个马杰森帕拉罗西拉的呀，那两个人呀，也是那婚姻的，结婚之前，那婚姻也没有离呀，漂亮的。And
then Shariputra Moggallana accepted this request and agreed to pass on the message, and then they returned to the human realm.
今天谢师傅念念了片，今天接的了蒙古部的接了母语是吧？然后今天今天夜里呢，那蒙古部接谢师傅念了康巴康是多少来着？今天蒙古部接来着吧？
是蒙古部的西里部的几十地方嘞，那这些民的呀，两个月的这些去，然后从这拉维斯，马是帕基斯提的哇，提的那西里部的，拉都拉多啊，俺拉维因斯，伊呢，从这个亚吉米都斯，俺亚吉多纳吉尼米都斯，俺都是多纳吉米都斯，也送回来斯，但是呢，西里部的所有的矿族的那个南部民吧，马上把咱矿都买回来了。
Then to the return to the human realm, and Shariputra returned first and immediately went to give the message to the students of the Tritika teacher. And then later when Moggallana met him, he asked, did you pass on the message? And Shariputra said, I did, but I didn't have the karmic connection with the students for them to actually hear the message. So I delivered the message, but no one heard it. So when Shariputra told them, it wasn't that they didn't hear, but rather that they didn't understand. It's the same word here and understand in Tibetan. So they didn't understand the what Shariputra was saying to them. So Mogliano thought, well, maybe they'll understand if I say it to them. So then he went to where the Chittikas were and to give them the message from their teacher that they need to stop engaging in the practices that he taught them, because it will lead to rebirth in the lower realms, and rather that they should follow the unmistaken teachings of Buddha Shakyamuni. Upon hearing, so when Mogliana, he met the students, the Chittika students, he gave them the message, and this time they understood, but their reaction was one of tremendous anger. They understood Mogliana to be criticizing them and their religious tradition and their teacher, and they exploded in anger, and they attacked him and beat him without mercy. So earlier we heard how Shariputra was the wisest, the most intelligent of all of Buddhist students. So he probably knew that it was better if these Chittikas didn't understand what he had to say. So I'm just joking. So Shariputra came across Mogliana's body, which had been so severely beaten, and he wrapped him up and carried him back to their monastery.
These fellow monks were amazed at what could happen, because Mogliana was so renowned for his magical powers, and it's said here that if any other being or all other beings even together wouldn't have been able to even move a single hair on his body. So of course I asked, why didn't you use your magical powers?
And so he replied, it's because of the power the power of this previously accumulated negative karma that ripened then, he didn't even think to use his magical powers or to try and defend himself in any way. So here these stories show that previously accumulated karma is that is definite to ripen, will ripen for anyone, whether there's someone with tremendous magical power such as Mogliana or even a Buddha himself.
Mm.
Mogliyana, he passed into Parinibbana, then the other Arahats were amazed by what they had seen here, that amongst all of them, Mogliyana had by far the most powerful magical powers, yet he was able to be beaten in such a severe manner. So seeing this, then they wished to remain within the world's ceased, and they too chose to enter Parinibbana.
These stories here were part of the autobiography, maybe from the Buddha. So he taught these stories himself. And so how should we come to understand this, bearing in mind what we heard last time a couple of weeks ago, that the way that these stories are presented, there are some who will accept them as they are presented and others who will interpret them. So last time we spoke about the Vaibhashika and Sautrantika view holders. So those who accept such a tenet, they will accept that what is being taught here as something quite literal, because they hold that when a being becomes a Buddha, let alone an Arahat before that, when a being becomes a Buddha, their form aggregate is still a contaminated aggregate, so a Buddha can become ill or be harmed. Whereas, so those were the views of those of the lower tenets. Those of the higher tenets, the Mahayana tenets, they don't hold this at all. They have hold the view that a Buddha's Buddha's body cannot be harmed; it cannot become ill. However, a Buddha, for the purpose of teaching, may choose to show that they have been harmed, or to show that, or pretend maybe that they have become ill. So, for example, in this illustration, a view holder of the Mahayana tenets, or Chittamatran or Madhyamika, they would look at these stories and say, well, if the Buddha was, for example, pierced by a splinter, that could have happened. But only the Buddha would have, not due to the power of karma, but the Buddha, because the Buddha has purified all their karma, but rather the Buddha showed this, or gave this as an illustration, so as to teach his students the importance of purifying all negativities, and not to be complacent and to think that some are too small, or that I will become too highly attained, that I won't be under the influence of karma. So there's a different way to understand these these stories.
So it's good that we understand these the different presentations or the various Buddhist tenets, because when you in your own time are reading different commentaries and different books, in some cases they will say one thing, and in another case they will say something quite contradictory, and this can be confusing. So, but if we come to understand the tenets well, we won't see any contradiction. We'll rather understand that a particular author was composing according to a particular tenet rather than another. When a Buddha is amongst human beings and has the form of a human being, then a Buddha will act like a human being, behave like a human being. So, for example, will eat food, will become ill and the like, just like other human beings. Because through acting like a human being and not as something completely unusual, then the Buddha will be able to form relationships and connections with beings and be able to lead them on the path of virtue, lead them towards the attainment of enlightenment. Whereas, so for example, in the life story of the Buddha, when he was meditating in the forest for 6 years and he was practicing austerities and his body became quite emaciated, then here what he was showing is that this is not the path to become enlightenment. So to engage in extreme austerities is not the path to enlightenment, because he underwent those austerities with the purpose of then being offered food, gaining full strength again, and then once again practicing and becoming a Buddha. So through acting like a human, he was able to teach and show the example that austerities do not lead to enlightenment. Rather, one needs to look after one's body, one needs to eat, and one needs to stay healthy, etc.
Mm. 지게 그럼 뭐지? 베이비 참는 말 하자. 내 지기기 조선 참 참다. 야구 접신 것은 그 차와 있나? 안 미기 지우는 말. 아니 그 나도 베이비 참다 가리니 미디 베이비 참 참으면 좋아. 네 체리 베이비 체리 그니 참디 가가 잡디 것은 미로지 마. 최소고 니 그 접신에 디타야 말해. 니 가서 걸었으네. 대바에 봐 미들 디 대바에 왔다. 그럼 베이비 참데 참고거든 忙错了对接
to give an analogy of to show why it's so important to that the Buddha needs to act in accordance with the community that he's with or the types of beings that he is with. So let's say the Buddha we know is all knowing, is omniscient, so therefore he knows everything and can do everything. But if he's now in the Tibetan community and there is a cultural dance that they maybe do at Losar at other times. So if he is going to partake in this cultural dance, and he knows how Westerners dance, and he knows the dancing style and the clothing style of the West, if he then shows that at this Tibetan cultural dance, the audience of Tibetans are not going to be very impressed with this person. They will, in fact, feel that his way of behavior is quite inappropriate, and their mind will not be receptive to what this display they're seeing before them. And the opposite is also true. If in the West there's maybe at a party or a nightclub, the Buddha was to go there and to be in the traditional Tibetan clothes and dance in the Tibetan style, this would not be accepted by those there. They would see this person as a little strange, to say the least. So therefore, this illustrates why it's important that a Buddha acts in accordance with the wishes of the beings that he is with, and where this is of particular relevance is in terms of his teachings. So it's imperative that the Buddha teaches in accordance with the particular dispositions of the beings
that he is with. 소수치선
So at this point, you may have a doubt that the Buddha says one thing to one audience, says something else to a different audience, acts in a particular way before certain people, acts in a different way before other people. This sounds a bit deceptive or like someone who's dishonest. So we don't see it in that way. We don't call it that. We don't say the Buddha is lying or acting in a deceptive manner because of the motivation. The motivation of someone who is lying or trying to deceive or cheat someone is to gain some benefit for themselves. The Buddha, of course, does not have this motivation, but is rather trying to benefit others and therefore acting in accordance with their wishes. Now, we also ourselves do something similar. On one level, sometimes our behavior is dishonest, or we may say a lie, but actually we wouldn't really call it that, or it shouldn't really be called that. For example, if we, if a friend invites us over and cooks us a tremendous meal, they went to a great amount of effort and cooked a meal, and when we taste it, of course we're going to say it's delicious, it's fantastic, it's thank you so much, this is really delicious food, whether we think so or not. And the reason we would say that something here that is not true, but we wouldn't call this a lie, is because we're not trying to get something for our own benefit. Rather, with a good motivation, with a motivation of loving kindness towards this person who has done something with a good heart towards us, we want to show our appreciation, we want to encourage them in doing such things and the like. So therefore, we'll tell them that this is the nicest meal I've ever eaten, even if we don't really feel that way. Again, one could have a doubt and see some contradiction here in the text, where we hear now these stories are being presented so as to make the point very clearly to us that the karma that we have accumulated, whether virtuous or non-virtuous, this, if it's not purified, has to be experienced. So that's one message that's coming through very clearly. But then we see in this particular story that Moggallana and Sariputra, they travel to the realms of the pretas and the hell beings so as to be of benefit to beings. So now we've got beings there who are experiencing the ripening results of their karma. So what can Moggallana and Sariputra do? They can't take on this karma or remove their karma or eliminate the karma of other beings that is being experienced. So yeah, one may see, it's possible that one may see a contradiction here.
A way then to understand this
is a Nazi, and to overcome to explain this possible contradiction, is that just like the Buddha said, previously accumulated karma has to be experienced unless it's been purified. So a being that has been born in the hell realms or in the preta realms, this previously accumulated karma has now ripened, and they have been reborn in either of these realms. So that karmic seed has now ripened. Now, when Moggallana and Shariputra go there, are they able to help these beings in these suffering situations? Well, in most cases, no. Because they're experiencing still, there's this karmic ripening result, and it's very powerful and dominant. But where these highly realized beings have a strong karmic connection with the beings suffering in the hell and the preta realms, yes, there they can have some positive interaction, and they can be of benefit. So in a previous life, this being that now has been reborn, say, as a preta being, if they have created a very strong karmic connection with Shariputra or Moggallana, then in this rebirth now, where they are born as a preta being, they can be helped. And the way that helped them would be to try and reduce the suffering that they are experiencing in that moment, and try and help them to be able to be reborn later out of that realm. So this is possible if the karmic connection is there, but with the majority of beings, it wouldn't have been possible. We could even imagine something like this, like the story actually happening in our own world, in maybe not our own experience, but of people within our own world. So the prisons are full of people who have, of course, committed crimes. And so they'll be in prison experiencing many difficulties and the like. However, if in a previous life they've formed a strong karmic connection with someone who works as, say, a prison guard or a prison governor, someone with some authority in the prison, and they have a strong karmic connection with such a person, then it is quite possible that due to the power of that karmic relationship, that this person with authority will be able to be of some benefit to the prisoner during his incarceration. So in this way, we could see something similar happening in our own world.
And
And how to understand these two stories where one we've seen that the Buddha, so a Buddha himself, is able to be pierced by a splinter, or someone who's an arahat, a photo story with tremendous magical powers, is able to be beaten to death. So as was explained earlier, we can see them understand these stories either in accordance with the lower tenets or the higher tenets, whatever we ourselves accept. But whichever tenet one holds, whichever view one accepts, the point of the story stays the same. And that is, whatever non-virtuous karma that we accumulate, no matter how small it is, we need to confess and purify this immediately, not to delay, not to forget about it. So whether it's a small negativity or a great negativity, this is something that we need to confess and purify immediately. Otherwise, the result will be experienced at some future point. And this can be likened to, for example, if there's a drought and one just throws some seeds on the ground, so the karmic causes are not there for those seeds to ripen. But if over time soil is blown on top of the seeds and then rain comes and the sun, etc., then a plant can grow. So it's exactly the same with the karmic seeds that we create. If we haven't destroyed them, if they haven't been purified, in other words, by confession, then by confession practice, then when the necessary causes and conditions are met, then that long dormant karmic seed will ripen into a suffering experience. So therefore, however one understands these stories, that is the point, immediately purifying negativities. And there's a story about a monk who was who got some white cloth, and he was in the forest, and he was needing to dye the cloth so as to make it the saffron color of the Buddha's robes, of the Buddha Sangha's robes. So he was in the process of dyeing his robes.
In the beauty past to our Chamjan Chinje, Yiminua, Yimin, Maneva, the Jindadva, Segar, the Mahat, the Shinadilla, Duaj de Matomare, the Gelon de Matu, Duajingo, the Tonje, the Nea Jovare. Daya, in a Gelon San Litin, Midigilaris. Sugar, dear Garichi, that was, left the Gelon de Made, the Que and Chun Tang, Suguiladua. That Jindad Midigar sometimes only.别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的别的
in water with dye. And then a villager came along. So this villager lived in a nearby settlement, and he had lost one of his calves, and he was looking for it. He saw the smoke of the monk's fire, and he approached the monk and asked, "What are you doing?" So the monk explained he's dyeing his robes, and the villager looked inside the pot, and he didn't see robes, rather he saw meat and bones. And then the monk too, he looked and he was amazed. He also saw what looked just like meat and bones rather than his robes. Then the villager was of course a bit upset, so took the monk to their local king and told the king what had happened, that this monk must have stolen my calf because he was cooking meat and bones and the like. Please punish him. Then the king duly punished the monk, and so the villager returned home. But then a few days later, he came across his calf. He found it again, and he realized that he was mistaken and he had falsely accused this monk. So he rushed back to the palace and apologized to the king and said, "I've made a tremendous mistake. The monk did nothing wrong." So the king agreed to release the monk, but then forgot. And he was a bit distracted by his kingly duties, and he forgot about the monk and left him languishing in the pit for 6 months. So the monk was now languishing in this pit for 6 months. Then many of his students, his fellow monks, they came to the king and said to the king, "This is a good monk, a pure monk," and attested for him and said, "He is not a thief. He would not have done anything like this." And the king immediately remembered that he was meant to release this monk so many months ago and went straight over to the pit where he saw the dreadful situation that the monk now was in. He was emaciated and immediately developed strong regret for having left him languishing in the pit for so long. So the monk replied, maybe in the Australian vernacular, and saying, "No worries." And this was my fault that I found myself languishing here for so long. So the king, of course, was a bit surprised to hear the monks saying actually he was has been languishing in this pit due to his own actions and not because the king had forgotten about him. So he asked the monk, So what did you do? What was the karmic cause that you created that has now ripened in this way? So the monk told him how in a distant previous life he was a thief, and he himself had stolen a cow, and when the owner of the cow had pursued him in the forest, he had led the cow to in front of a monk who was meditating and left the cow there in front of the monk. Then when the owner of the cow came onto the scene, he blamed this this monk who was in retreat and took him away to the king, and he was punished. So from that action, he accumulated this karmic this karmic cause, which has ripened not just in this present life, but he has experienced suffering from this powerful karmic act throughout numerous previous lifetimes. And now finally, that karmic cause has been exhausted. In this lifetime, that particular karmic seed has been fully experienced.
だって、で、こっちゃ、ちけ、みじけてやんで、これで全住全だ、それは。みじけ、かちたで、下だ、ろごとんろわ。ね、下だ、ろごよまるわ。れじゅ全だ、じゅごろわ。みじけ、下だ、ろごとんわれ。だ、この地だで、この下だ、ろごとんわれ。じゃあ、で、とんやで、かちれすな。だんがれ、りぎ、じぶで、みにゃぎ、きんれ、だ、きんでね、ち、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ちゅう、ち ཁོ་ཡོ་གི་གུ་ཅི་ཡོ་ན་ཡོང་གོ་མ་པེན་ན་སབོལ་མ་སོན་ན་ཁོ་ཅེ་གི་ནི་བོ་ཡོ་ན་ཁོ་ལ་ཅེ་སཱ་ཅི་གོ་རེ་དེ་ཅུ་ཅི་གོ་རེ་ཁོ་ཅི་དང་ཅེ་གོ་རེ་དྲེ་ཅི་གོ་རེ་ཉི་མ་ཅེ་ན་ཁོ་ལ་ཅེ་ནི་བོ་ཡོ་ན་ཅོ་སག་གང་ལ་ཤ་ཅན་ཡོ་ཅེ་ཁེ་མི་དུ་ཨ་དེ་ན་ཤིན་
What's important in the story is that actually the part where the owner of the cow came up to the monk, and they both looked inside the cauldron, and they both saw the same thing. They saw the cooking meat and bones. They no longer saw, or the monk no longer saw his own robes in the cauldron. So what happened here? Because it wasn't really meat and bones, but it was actually the robes of the monk. And so what happened here is they both had a mistaken consciousness. So this sense consciousness, this ripened in dependence on causes and conditions. So here they both had a particular karmic seed that had ripened into the sense consciousness that enabled them to perceive, mistakenly perceive the object. So here what's important to bear in mind is how these karmic seeds that we've accumulated will ripen when they meet the required causes and conditions. So whether the karmic seeds we've accumulated are virtuous or non-virtuous, when they meet the required conditions, they will ripen and be experienced, as was the case here. The karmic condition ripened and a mistaken sense consciousness ripened.
ཁྱི ཕྱད མ 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 ཁྱི ཕྱད མ
So this this illustration relates to us as well, of course. So we in the past have accumulated a tremendous number of powerful, virtuous karmic causes. And so we've accumulated, all of us, a lot of merit. But we find ourselves in this current position we're in. And that is because we haven't met the required ripening conditions. Because if we had met those required ripening conditions, this powerful virtue that we have accumulated in the past, we would now be experiencing. So this is something that we need to think about, because we all have accumulated causes for enlightenment, causes for liberation and the like, but we are needing to accumulate the required ripening conditions so that we can bring the result about.
Of course, on a continuum, we have both powerful virtuous as well as non-virtuous karmic imprints. So depending on what conditions we are creating in this life, it depends which of these previously accumulated powerful causes is strengthening in its power, in its potency, and coming to the stage of being able to ripen. So if we're accumulating a lot of virtuous causes and conditions, then this powerful virtuous karma that we've accumulated in the past, this will be growing in strength or growing in potency. However, if we're accumulating a lot of negative conditions and the like, then our previously accumulated unwholesome karma, this is what is going to be strengthening in potency.
This is something that we can all understand on a course level. I can understand by myself, as can everyone here. And just by looking back at how we were before we met the Buddha Dharma in our younger years, and our way of thinking and our way of behaving, and then after meeting the Dharma and coming to understand the Buddha Dharma, and having faith in the Buddha Dharma, in other words, putting the Buddha Dharma into action, into one's own life, and looking at how our way of thinking and our way of acting has changed over this period of time, we can come to understand this presentation here on a course level. So as the gardeners here will know very clearly, if you have a seed planted,
it's not going to magically become a fully grown plant overnight. Rather, it needs to be cared for. And depending on how well one cares for it, how lovingly one cares for it, the plant will either grow into something beautiful and magnificent, or it will maybe sprout and withen die. So this comes down to the conditions that you create for the maturation of this particular seed. So it's the same with the karmic seeds that we have accumulated on our continuum, that we have accumulated and are now stored on our continuum. We need to accumulate the required conditions, and the more conditions that we accumulate and of greater power, then the potency of these seeds will strengthen and grow themselves. So for these causes that these karmic seeds that we've accumulated in the past, that will lead to progression and the attainment of Dharma paths and progression towards enlightenment and the like. For these to be brought to fruition, we need to accumulate the required causes, and the strength of the causes will have an impact in terms of how quickly and powerfully these previously accumulated seeds ripen. So here, if one engages in listening to a lot of teachings and then thinking about the meaning of these teachings and meditating on them and then applying what one's understanding of the teachings to one's life and one's behavior and how one relates to others and the like, then one is creating very powerful conditions to bring around the maturation of the karmic seeds that we have accumulated. However, if on the other hand, we have these seeds on our continuum, but we don't attend many teachings or read many Dharma books or engage in regular meditation and the like, then those seeds that we've accumulated are not going to be meeting the required powerful conditions and will not grow and develop and ripen. In the same way, if someone takes a piece of white cloth and puts it in a bowl and covers it in blue cloth and red cloth and black cloth and yellow cloth and the like, the white cloth in the center of this bowl is going to be completely hidden and obscured by all these other pieces of colored cloth around it. So similar to this, the nature of our mind is completely pure and stainless, but it's surrounded by karmic imprints, the karmic imprints that we ourselves have accumulated. So this pure and stainless nature of our minds is surrounded by these karmic imprints. Now, if we want to be able to experience the nature of our mind, to expose the nature of our mind, we need to remove all these non-virtuous karmic imprints that surround it. And the way to do that is through cultivating the opposing minds. So these are having virtuous karmic imprints there through generating virtuous minds. So the way we purify our mind is through accumulating virtuous minds, or cultivating, developing virtuous minds. And the more we listen to teachings and then reflect and meditate on these teachings, and then that is the more we are cultivating these virtuous minds. And that is what leads to the purifying of our current situation, purifying of those negative karmic imprints.
So tonight we've looked at a couple of things. We've looked at how all the karma that we've accumulated, whether wholesome or unwholesome, those imprints are stored on our continuum, and those will have to be experienced, including, of course, the negative karmic imprints we've accumulated. They will be experienced as suffering unless we purify them. So here what we need to take away is two key things on this side. One, we need to cease engaging in further negativities. And we spoke about how even small negativities need to be avoided. We need to guard our mind from going in a negative direction, even over something that seems quite insignificant. And then accompanying this, our previously accumulated negativities, those that we weren't able to guard ourselves from engaging in, these we need to engage in purification practice, and we need to purify these negativities that we've accumulated. So on this side, we need to cease engaging in negativities
and we need to engage in purification practice. Then, of course, our virtual seeds, they are also stored on our continuum, and so as to experience these virtuous seeds that we've accumulated, to have them ripening, we need to accumulate the required conditions. And so we looked at that tonight. So to do that, we need to engage in virtue as much as we can and try and develop these virtuous ways of thinking. So in other words, our mind habitually going in a positive direction, in a virtuous direction. And if we're doing that, we are then creating the causes for our previously accumulated virtuous karma to ripen. And so what more can we do on this side now, on the virtuous side? So here, we need to regularly recall the virtuous activities that we have engaged in and rejoice in them. Make our mind happy and delighted and rejoice in the virtue that we have accumulated. And then we need to dedicate this virtue that we have accumulated. So this virtue that we've accumulated, we need to dedicate towards, for the sake of all sentient beings who are suffering, may I become a Buddha so as to lead all sentient beings out of their suffering state to enlightenment themselves. So in other words, with the motivation of bodhicitta, we need to dedicate the virtue that we've accumulated. And then furthermore, on this side, we also need to guard our mind against anger, because a mind of anger can destroy accumulated virtue. So again, with regard to the side of virtue, we need to guard our mind against anger, and we need to regularly recall and rejoice in the virtue that we've accumulated. And when we've accumulated virtue, we must rejoice and dedicate it with the mind, with the motivation of bodhicitta, dedicate it towards the attainment of enlightenment. So that, in brief, is what we've looked at tonight. So then, next time we'll continue, and we hear at the bottom of page 100, middle of page 122. So we have time tonight, so please, some questions.
I'm not very skillful at lying, so it seems to me that what we call white lies in English, in order to not harm others, generally my understanding of white lie means you're telling it, not as a small lie, but to not harm others. So saying the food is good, if you didn't like it, that's fair enough, it's a good motivation. It's very easy to fool yourself, to tell an untruth or a white lie in order to avoid confrontation, or to avoid seeing the pain of another, or to avoid pain oneself. So it's a tricky mind. It's easy to dress a fear as a positive motivation. So my question is, I don't know how to answer, but how do we tell that we're truly trying to benefit the other? How do we trust ourselves not to have the tricky mind just avoiding it because we don't want to cause pain ourselves or avoid confrontation?
Yeah, I understand. So in terms of telling small untruths or white lies so as not to harm someone else, we could actually be deceiving ourselves. And we'd be saying we're going to tell this lie for the benefit of others when really we're just wanting to avoid a difficult circumstance or have things go easier for us, something like this. So how can we tell what's going on really with our motivation? Yeah. Okay, good, thank you. Zumare, ye shempengi kulung yin dok dok dungiya. Yini ngadi ha kogi mare. Tene kunung Selpo Yinmin, Kanjas Hako Kere.
Kungi
Pento Kichedu, Nedi Tumatung Labien. Yine Nuni, the Kuno Nuni Mare, Yine Sam, the Kuno Nuni Yin, Samgidu, Yine Penatella, Nede De Kola Samna, Dene O Marangla, Asunkob Jesong, Champagne Kola Samna Tamasong. Dene Narangla, Sugla, Koko Tangsong. Narangi Narangla, Koko Tangsong. Dene Kandesal Kokire, Sansam, Narangi Narangla, Koko Tangiade, Kandesal Kokire. It is
Kandesu Gotanga, the Kandesal Kokire. Susu Gotanga, said the Kandarwale.
Name is simple, or chocolate china, then he can kill Yaposakite. You're learning Keran chocolate to talking about it, then he did it. Jetting the Samsung didn't over here.
That's what you get. Someone are carcass, the question would do a city, someone carcass, and I can't see moving to them because they make you move by some big, some time do, could you move by some other, call the hot corner, take 2 minutes, they are well, Marison, because call it. Jambi, ये गोद है जुड़े योंसी के लिए तो समना ला जी तो शिम्बु मिले तो खाला या वो किन्हें जी ये मासूम हो जी जेठा आज ये मातो इन्हें तो शिम्बु दूर लाभ शाओ सम सम जिन्हें सम दान दे सम को ना यहाँ दी तो ऐसे तो जापान चाहे मारे तो को कहते हैं को जीवन हो मारे संभी के सम दिले को या जंसे के सम दिले मारे सो को शिम्बु मिले को दुबजाई चेस सम संभी के को या यापुचे मार संभी सम लो शिक को लगा था को जो न शिम्बु तो शिम्बु तो से तो नम्बर दे दे सो रहती दे से मिला से ही हुआ.
So yes, it is certainly possible that one can reply or engage in a situation with this impure motivation, this way we're deceiving ourselves. So here, if previously one has cultivated the a steady or consistent motivation of loving kindness, then one's interaction with this person will be motivated by this mind of loving kindness. So if that is dominant, you are not going to deceive them for your own benefit. So here comes to this cultivation of the mind of loving kindness, so that one acts with his mind present, because the mind of loving kindness is thinking about the position of the other, and then that is dominant in the mind, not one's own goal or what one oneself wants.
Okay.
Yeah, again, I was also saying they also say white lie and black lie. Another question? Oh, right at the back, Andy, yes.
Surely, if you don't harm somebody because it's a white lie, you create habits
of lying. So, even with this white lie, if you're not harming the person, are you not creating the habit of lying? Then So if with this illustration, you are saying something's delicious when it's not, then Yes, you can say that this is an untruth. But it's not what we would call a lie because of the motivation behind it. So what is that motivation? It's a motivation of loving kindness. So what is the mind that is being strengthened? It is this mind of loving kindness. Because that is the habituation. So that is becoming stronger. So yes, on the superficial level, a lie was told. But it's not what we would call a lie. Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh,